98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata.
This is the greatest.
Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show that's ever existed.
It really, really is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. A tremendous Friday to all you sports fans in the Valley. Hello, everybody. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata. And on a day, if you ever want to feel the age, the years passing by, this is a day that we are not only going to honor Hank Aaron, who has passed away at the age of 86, but Dirk Cutter has retired today.
Really? How old is Dirk now?
I don't know. 39 consecutive years in football. One too many at Arizona State.
Some ASU fans might argue it was a lot more than one too many.
Right.
Hey, look, we know coaching takes a toll on people.
Yeah.
And Dirk is older than you would think he is. He does look younger. I remember that being my first impression of him when he got the job at ASU. It was like, wow, he's that experienced and that old?
Uh-huh.
Looks a little bit younger.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Enjoy retirement. He's 61.
It brings me back to the time that I went up to Boise to interview him because he was coming down to be the next head coach at Arizona State. And that was the first time I ever saw that blue field up close and personal.
Oof.
Yeah, that'll give you an idea of years passing by.
It's an eyesore.
There you go. All right, so what do you got? Anything fun today?
Eh.
No? Not really? Come on, man. It's Friday.
We got a lot of ground to cover.
That word you used yesterday that made Jared giggle? Apparently a senator accidentally said it today on the Senate floor.
Well, accidentally said it or said it in context?
Accidentally. He tried to say insurrection and he ended up saying something. Right.
I did, but I used it correctly.
You did, yes.
As a term to describe the lifting of heavy objects, most like a construction-related term.
That's right. Dan's throwing me under the bus like I had a... Dan smiled plenty big when you said it, too.
We went to commercial break, and I told Bick, I was like, oh, it's just a matter of minutes until I hear something about that. And sure enough, one of our radio buddies from another station tweeted me and said he was giggling like a schoolchild.
Right. Just one of those words. It does it. Right?
Come on, people.
Right.
Time we step up and be more mature.
If you tie all that together, I talk about these events that kind of make you feel like, okay, I am cognizant of the fact that I'm getting older. Then something like that, you realize you never really grow up.
No.
At least not between the years.
No.
All right? The same stupid stuff is funny, makes you giggle.
Oh, I tell people all the time. There's three different, everybody's got three different ages, especially for me.
Okay.
You've got your real age.
Okay.
You've got your mental age.
Uh-huh.
And you've got your physical age.
Right.
They're three different numbers.
Yes, they are. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's a really, interesting.
In my head, I'm 15.
Oh, you and me both. Start the show, Carlin.
The Splash.
Splash.
The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
The Splash, brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
Yeah, we start with the sad news from the baseball world today. Henry Aaron, who was baseball's career record holder for most home runs from 1974 to 2007, passed away today at the age of 86. Aaron broke into the big leagues in 1954 as a 20-year-old with the Milwaukee Braves. He played 23 seasons. Yet was an all-star 25 times. How's that possible? Major League Baseball for a stretch of years had two all-star games per year. So he had more all-star appearances than seasons played. You won two batting titles, three gold gloves, and MVP.
Talk about an unbreakable record.
That's unbelievable.
Won the 1957 World Series and was inducted into the Hall of Fame as a first ballot member in 1982. Sad day.
I love this guy. He was just a true titan of sport. He had a grace about him. He had a royalty about him. When you saw him, you thought, oh, man, there's a king right there. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? I also find some sadness in this because he, in my mind, is still the all-time home run leader. He is he's a guy that achieved America's number one sporting statistical record and had it stolen from him by a cheater. And so I feel for him there. But then finally, I say this. I read something during the Black Lives Matter movement after the death of George Floyd when Hank Aaron did an interview where somebody close to him said that this incident has nearly broken him. And I've tried to find it subsequently, and I never have. Mm-hmm. But I remember seeing it at the time. And something about what was going on about a year ago, less than that, in this country had gotten him really sad as somebody who's lived through real awful racism. Okay, he was a lifelong Democrat. No matter what side you're on, I don't care. That's not the issue. There's a feeling going out that at least he died in some form of peace mentally as somebody who really went through the civil rights struggle about as profoundly as anyone has.
Oh, yeah. C. Reed, when he was chasing that record, what he went through and feared for his life on a daily
basis.
Bill
Russell in Boston, what he had to go through.
I read a thing about Hank Aaron. They said when he was a child, he had to hide in his house. The KKK was coming through. And
also, bonus trivia nugget. Hank Aaron appeared on an episode of Happy Days.
Had a great nickname, Hammerin.
Yeah, so like I said, sad day. Phoenix Suns, they return home for an actual home game for the first time in 16 days when they host the Denver Nuggets in the first of back-to-back games tonight at Phoenix Suns Arena. Suns come in 8-5 after their win over the Rockets on Wednesday. The Nuggets are just 7-7, but they're coming off a win over Oklahoma City on Tuesday. Denver forward Michael Porter Jr., who has missed the last 10 games, is back with the team, but questionable to play tonight. Tip-off's at 8 for a national television audience, which, by the way, the third national television game for the Suns in 1 week. That's normally two seasons worth of national television appearances.
And it's the old, if it's free, I'll take three theory.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for DeAndre Ayton tonight. If he can put together a third game that looks like the last two, I'm going to be very, very, very happy.
Yep. Of course, you can hear it right here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, with pregame coverage starting at 7:30. The NBA also adjusted a bunch of start times for future games. Those adjustments affect the Suns. Next Thursday's game against Golden State is being pushed back an hour to an 8 o'clock local start time. That due to the advancement of game day testing and getting results in a timely fashion. So pushing some tips back.
Now you know why the back half of the NBA schedule is yet to be released. I think we all realize that. The back end of the NBA season is going to be a mess.
Yes.
But we just have to embrace it.
The Arizona Coyotes back home after dropping back-to-back games against the Vegas Golden Knights, hosting the Golden Knights for the next two, starting tonight at 7 o'clock at Gila River Arena. Vegas, the only 4-0 team in the NHL with 8 points. They're tied with Montreal for most in the league. The Coyotes 1-2-1 through four games, 3 points, tied for last with Anaheim in the West. Faceoff is at 7. That's on Fox Sports Arizona. Struggles continue for Bobby Hurley's ASU Sun Devils. They dropped their fifth straight, 83-82 to arch-rival Arizona last night. Azulis Tabellis caught an air ball from James Akinjo, laid it in ahead of the buzzer to give the Wildcats the win. ASU had a 5-point lead with 2:22 to go, but they didn't score another point. 5-game losing streak is the first for ASU in 10 years. Hasn't happened since the Herb Sendek era, when they lost 9 straight on their way to a 12-19 season. Same two teams Monday night in Tucson.
Wasn't ASU's basketball team supposed to be good this year?
I don't know where you heard that. Would you prove to me that somebody said that?
What is going on with this basketball team? It's some of this endgame stupidity is just mind-blowing to me.
Yep.
And it happened again last night. We'll have some thoughts on this.
Oh, we do. College Hoops tonight, GCU hosting the Dixie State Trailblazers in Phoenix at 7 o'clock. Championship weekend almost here. Of course, we get the two for Sundays. The NFC Championship game up first in Green Bay, Packers and Bucks at 1:05. And then the Bills and Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium for the AFC crown at 4:40. Patrick Mahomes once again took the majority of snaps in Chiefs practice yesterday, but again was listed as a limited participant because he hasn't cleared the league's concussion protocols officially. News from the league this morning, the NFL announced that they'll cap attendance in Super Bowl 55 in Tampa at 22,000, but 7,500 of those tickets will be distributed to vaccinated healthcare workers.
Okay.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, they announced that a while ago, and that is a really cool thing they're doing. It's a nice little reward for all the healthcare workers during COVID-19. That leaves about, what, 15,000 tickets now? And I'm asking because if Tampa wins, they have a home Super Bowl. We've never seen that before.
That is true. They're not going to win, though. Yeah. Oh, what did I just do?
What did you just do? I mean, because you're right. Aaron Rodgers has been so good in conference championship games.
Yes, he
Oh,
has.
Wait.
Yeah, there's your splash for Friday, January 22nd, and we'll pick up where we left off. Some NFL playoff talk, all the latest on the two matchups in each conference straight ahead on this Football Friday. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Football Friday with Bickley and Murata. Presented by Smashburger. Every bite a better burger. Smashburger, featuring the new pulled pork tailgater. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
He still needs to go through concussion protocol. So where exactly is he? The NFL has five stages to that concussion protocol. He did practice with his helmet on in limited capacity and took most of the starter reps. That puts him between phase four and phase five, really.
That's Jeff Darlington of ESPN updating the situation today on Patrick Mahomes and his progress through the concussion protocol, which the whole world has been talking about since he left that game against the Cleveland Browns last Sunday. Darlington did follow up and say this about Patrick Mahomes. Good news for Chiefs fans.
What we anticipate to happen today is that the trainer for the Chiefs will sign off on Mahomes to say that he is symptom-free and has returned to baseline. At that point, it will be up to an independent neurological examiner to give the final blessing to get him back on the field. So once that happens, that's the key here. The Chiefs can say as much as they want. Mahomes can say that he's feeling great, but not until that independent neurological examiner takes a look at him and says that he's good will we not be guaranteed that Mahomes is on that field on Sunday.
So it's all up to the independent examiner at this point, which, you know, if he's passed and gets the recommendation from the team personnel. And again, I believe the Chiefs have acted very responsibly in all of this and been very deliberate through all of this. I don't think there's any reason why that shouldn't happen today. And we'll get the best possible matchups for the at least from a quarterback standpoint for Sunday's action.
If Patrick Mahomes is in a state of fog, if he is in a recovering, rehabilitating phase, and the Chiefs are covering it or anybody's covering any of that up, it makes him very susceptible to further trauma this weekend. So I think it will be a big moment for Kansas City fans to watch Patrick Mahomes absorb that first hit and then get back up like nothing's wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a real big deal for them and for him. The fact that you remember how I came in on Monday and I told you there was a elitist named dude who worked for a radio station in Kansas City who had a source who claimed it was a neck or a nerve injury.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't true, and that didn't come out by accident. That was a diversion to get people away from this whole, oh, maybe it's not a concussion kind of thing. This is a very, very touchy subject for the NFL for many, many obvious reasons. They put a lot of money, they put a lot of time, they've even put blue tents on the sideline to show that they care about concussions. And the world saw Patrick Mahomes look like he had just gotten hit by Mike Tyson in his prime. And that's what's kind of on the line here. It's not an issue if Patrick Mahomes gets through this game. But if Patrick Mahomes goes down again, it most certainly is an issue. And then everything about this process is going to get deeper investigated. So that's kind of what I see when I look at this game. We talked to, I believe his name was Adam Teicher from Kansas City yesterday, who is a longtime sports dude. And he basically said it very succinctly. The story is too far down the road. This team is too far down the road for there really to be any other decision other than Patrick Mahomes is playing. Because that's what everybody involved wants.
Yeah, I mean, as a consumer, right? I mean,
the league wants it. The team wants it.
I don't want to watch Chad Henne start in an AFC championship game.
No.
But then it comes down to, all right, you got two quarterbacks, and I was looking at this, too, and this might be like a weekend research project for me because, you know, kind of what I do. The quarterbacks remaining in the NFL playoffs, Aaron Rodgers of Green Bay, number one in quarterback rating for the season in the league, 121.5. Patrick Mahomes, third at 108.2. Josh Allen, fourth at 107.2. Tom Brady, ninth, 102.2. The 100 is usually a threshold of very, very good quarterback play. When the scale ends at 158.3, that's the way it works. I don't know if there's ever been a season, and that's what I wanted to look up, because it didn't even happen last year, as Aaron Rodgers was under 100, of all four quarterbacks being above 100 ratings for the season.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need proof of how important quarterback play is.
Well,
there you go.
In big-time football games, quarterbacks drive television ratings. The ratings for these two games combined surely are going to set a record. I don't see how they don't. When you're talking about Brady versus Rodgers and Josh Allen against Patrick Mahomes, that's real compelling stuff. You wonder if Josh Allen is big enough for this moment, if he's going to sort of shrivel a little bit, or if he's going to take this money and or this moment and just blow up in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, he's right on the cusp. Excellent year, has shown improvement throughout his career. You find a way to go to Kansas City, beat the Chiefs, and go to a Super Bowl in a city like Buffalo. There's your newest member of the elite quarterback club.
He's by far the most athletic quarterback left of the group right now, with Patrick Mahomes being dinged up, and Patrick Mahomes wasn't really a dual threat to begin with. But this is the guy that could put forth a game that blows everybody's mind if he's up for it.
This is the guy that could take the leap to the next tier.
That's just what Vinny said.
That's when we did the rankings of who has the most to gain with a Super Bowl win. I think he has the most to gain because he becomes in the conversation now every year as elite. As the guy that you want to build your franchise around.
Yeah. And he's impossible to not cheer for the way he plays. There's a certain rawness to him that's electrifying.
You're right. Here was Josh Allen earlier in the week talking about, you know, anything different going into this week?
We're not going to change who we are. Like I said, it's obviously the biggest game, like I said, because it's the next one. But we understand that we don't have to be anyone different than who we are. And if we can go out there and execute and play the game the right way and trust each other and play complementary football, you know, odds are the results are going to be pretty good.
And also, he was asked the question, what would a Super Bowl mean, big picture?
Ever since I was a little kid, football's been my favorite. So it's winning that Super Bowl. It's being on the stage and celebrating with my teams and going into the locker room and spraying champagne everywhere. And it's just one of those things that not many people get to do. You know, and we're a long way from that point. You know, I hate thinking about stuff like that, but, you know, our goal is Sunday night against the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead Stadium, and we know it's going to be loud. Like I said, we know it's going to be a dogfight. It's a really good team we're playing, and, you know, we got to go and, you know, try to get a W.
Yeah, it's not going to be full, so you're not going to have the full Arrowhead crowd at capacity making all the noise that they make, but I kind of sarcastically, on Saturday last weekend, tweeted out, how come you can't social distance in the upper deck of stadiums? Kansas City's doing it. they got fans in the upper deck.
You can.
Just means employing more people,
right?
More protocols, more testing.
Yeah, and I saw you ask this, and the notorious Clue Haywood responded to you on Twitter by that, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. You've got to hire many more people to secure a second level and a staff.
True.
A second level.
But you're also making a lot more money in ticket revenue.
Yeah.
And I assume concessions are open as well.
Yeah. This is the one thing, obviously, that I approve about this weekend is we got two outdoor games, hallelujah, in iconic cities in terms of NFL context. Franz brought up an interesting point this morning when he said, think about how different it is in the NFL when you get old guard teams like the Packers and the Chiefs, and think about how silly it would sound if you're talking about the Brewers and the Royals. The counterpart from that state.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
It's one way to look at it.
One feels like iconic football. The other feels like minor league baseball. Yeah, that's silly. It's crazy. But, I mean, because, listen, I would do anything to, like, be in Kansas City tonight, bouncing around, getting barbecue. I'd do anything to be in Green Bay.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's ever said that. That's an old Packers fan. I've never been to Green Bay, so I can't say.
It's, you really need to go once.
Once.
Yes, once.
Coming up next, it was quite the thriller last night in Tempe between ASU and U of A, but the losing streak continues for the Sun Devils. We'll get into the details of it next. Spickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Ahead to Akinjo, 4 seconds, 3 seconds. Akinjo, a three-pointer, partially blocked, and the rebound caught and put in at the buzzer by Tubelis, and Arizona wins it, 84-82.
I just realized I said the score wrong in the splash. 84-82. Tim Healy, the voice of the Sun Devils, with the final call. It was a tight game before that, and they beat the buzzer, and they win, and Arizona hands ASU its fifth straight loss. Like I said in the splash pick, this is actually correct. They have not had a five-game losing streak as a program since the 2009 or 2010-2011 season under Herb Sendek. And people will say, okay, well, why is that a big deal? Because you said it, and I got all tongue-in-cheek with you. This year was supposed to be different for the Arizona State Sun Devils. This team right now, and I'm not saying they can't turn it around, although they made it a lot harder last night with that loss because those losses stick with you. But this team right now is a cautionary tale about putting too much stock in what a team looks like on paper. Because anybody from the ASU side that watched that game last night, and we'll get into what happened late, and Bobby Hurley's reaction to it, there's very little chemistry on that team.
That's pretty obvious.
I think that's a fair statement. What goes into it with players missing time for COVID, with the program being shut down, with games being postponed. Look,
new kids and old kids.
Every program's dealing with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
ASU's not adapted to it, Will.
No. Yeah, I don't know what it is, Vinny. I don't know whether it's having a guy like Remy Martin, who's been around so long, trying to kind of vibe and share the team with young one-and-doners. I don't know what's going on with this basketball team, but I cannot believe how disappointing they are. If nothing else, ASU basketball has been really good in the opening months of recent seasons under Bobby Hurley. Mm-hmm. And really just about the only Pac-12 team that seems capable of winning a big game. And now this year, with what was a roster that looked really excellent on paper, they just don't have it. And I've heard people complain when things are going good for ASU and when they're recruiting well. People always credit Bobby Hurley for creating an open, free-flowing offense where no one is restricted from jacking up shots and everything's encouraged and it's all good until they don't play well. And then people are like, can you believe these are the shots this team takes in key situations? Last night you saw that possession. You saw Alonzo Verge with that half-baked drive to the basket, ill-timed and half-baked. You look at that, you look at just the lack of defense from Jalen Graham on that last play where he was just lollygagging up the floor.
And we'll get into that too. But again, let's start.
It's mind blowing how this team is just coughing up games.
Well, I thought Remy Martin actually played a really good second half of that game. But one of the luxuries of having a guard, and Bobby Hurley wants to argue that one of the luxuries of having a guard that experienced and that good is that he's going to get a whistle at the end. And maybe that's the case in the NBA, but when you're playing basketball in the Pac-12 where the officiating sucks night in, night out, don't expect a whistle. There was some curious calls against both teams late in that game. The offensive foul on Tabellis on the pick where his own player tripped over him and he gets called for an offensive foul. The offensive foul they called on Remy Martin was ridiculous.
So you
don't know what you're going to get.
But you can pretty much guess that it's not going to be consistent. You're probably going to be really ticked off if you let it tick you off.
But Remy Martin, one of the luxuries, as I was getting to, is you got to know the game situation. When you're in a tie ball game and you have possession of the ball and there's a 2-second differential between the shot clock and the game clock, worst case scenario has to be you're going to overtime. You went too early. You took a bad shot. Mm-hmm. You relied on a whistle to be blown. It wasn't blown, and it looked like everybody wearing maroon uniforms last night was waiting for the whistle to be blown because there was nothing resembling hustle back the other way.
No.
And Bobby Hurley, I think, unfortunately, focused on one issue after the game.
There were a lot of... a lot of reasons, and I could sit here and talk about our turnovers in the first half and, some other things that I wasn't pleased with about our performance, but I thought we played a winning game and that Remy Martin deserved to go to the free throw line because he was fouled in the restricted area and the player did not have his arms go straight up. One of his arms contacted Remy Martin as he was shooting the ball and it was not straight up. So, again, I don't know what else we really need to discuss tonight.
Well, that same thing could have happened 4 seconds later, and you might have been able to win the game in overtime without the benefit of that call.
I like Bobby Hurley a lot, but that is just, I don't know why he chose to do that, but that either you're grasping at low-hanging fruit, you're giving people something to focus on that isn't you or your program, or you're just not being smart about it. To distill a basketball game like that to one non-call from an official. Yeah, you're right. He blew a call. Welcome to the Pac-12.
He tweeted a picture.
I know. I saw that. I know. He doubled down on Twitter, tweeting out a picture showing it was clearly a foul, but okay. Minutes before that, very near, in the very recent vicinity, was a call that drove Sean Miller batty, as in you just explained it, on Tabellis. And it was really, it was as bad as the non-call on Remy Martin at the end of the game. Okay. I get that. But that's,
do you think Remy Martin was clearly fouled?
Listen, when I looked at that still photo, what? When you look at the still photo, his arms are clearly not straight up. But in real time, it looked like, okay, they let that one go. I certainly wouldn't go into a press conference and go, you know what? Everything that happened in that game, forget about that. Let's boil it down to what really matters here. And that was that call. We played a winning game. No, you didn't.
No, and he kind of made light of the fact of the turnovers. I mean, that game was unwatchable for the first half because ASU looked so discombobulated, turning the ball over, missing shots, couldn't hit free throws. They were lucky they were still within distance of getting the lead. They played much better in the second half, but if you want to talk about tweeting out, I tweeted out a photo last night, too, where ASU's starting five was 5 feet behind the guy who caught the air ball and laid it in.
Yeah.
Why is that? Well, why did that happen?
There were so many times in the first half where, like, three, four guys on ASU were just lingering outside the three-point line. There's just no real flow or purpose.
It's a lot of one-on-one play.
Oh, it's painful to watch. That was an embarrassing night for the program last night on a lot of different levels. And it was an embarrassing night for Pac-12 officiating. Yeah, most of them are. Most of them are. What a joke.
I also discovered something last night.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of Bill Walton. But you got to be in the mood for it. You got to be in the right mindset to enjoy Bill Walton's commentary. And I don't know if it was... the fact that he and Dave Pasch were in separate locations and that creates some sort of communication barrier. Bill just seemed a little bit switched on extra last night. And it when the team you're rooting for is not playing well, it can get real irritating real
that's
quick.
That's the key right there. So when you're watching the game when your team is losing, it becomes very annoying.
Yeah.
And I love Bill Walton.
Yeah, that is the key to it. There were a couple of tangents from him that I did not love. The unabashed gushing over Larry Scott. Okay, you can spare me that. And then it was he got in that weird tangent where he was sort of like asking in an accusatory manner to Dave, have you ever lost a family member? He was trying to make the point about Remy Martin.
How about the part about the twins?
Oh, that was
he didn't understand
too.
The concept of fraternal twins.
Yeah, right.
See, that's funny to me, though.
Twins are the same.
Right. Oh, was that a crucial part of the game?
Well, yeah. But see, that's why Dave Pasch is the perfect person to do the games with him, because he knows how to call the game and ignore him, and then after the play is over, he'll be like, then he'll start explaining to Bill what the hell's going on.
On the flip side of it, though, I was impressed by a couple players on the U of A side of things.
Were you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Akinjo looked really good last night.
Mm-hmm.
Hit big, big shots over and over again.
It'll be interesting to see if this team stays together and there's no further sanctions
vindication,
by the NCAA.
Jarrett, well, vindication, baby.
I mean, which team are you talking about?
U of A. Oh. U of A.
Who cares?
No, because, well, ASU actually has, I don't think, I mean, U of A doesn't have any first-round talent really this year. ASU, I saw they put up a graphic. Looks like they have two
to the top 25.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that working out?
It's not.
Was Jeff Pendergraft?
This team's been broken for a while.
Was he a first-round pick?
I believe he was.
Okay, because I was trying to think, like, when was the last time they had
might have been at the very back end of the first round.
Two first-round picks in one draft at ASU.
Okay.
Coming up next, same two teams on Monday. That should be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up next, a sad day as one of the all-time greats in Major League Baseball passed away. We'll reflect next. That's Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta. Dan Bickley and Vince Marotta. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
One ball and no strikes. Aaron waiting. The outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone.
When you think back of that moment in 1974, we always think of the Milo Hamilton call of that home run on the Braves side of things. But Vin Scully was providing play-by-play for the Los Angeles Dodgers, the opposition that night. And there you heard the description of the action. And as Vin Scully did, he then let the scene take over before chiming in a little bit later
on. What was the famous story related to that? That Henry Aaron, that they started the season in Cincinnati and he like hit a home run in his first game and then they sat him because they wanted him to break the record at home. Then I think the commissioner got in and ordered them back in the lineup. He ended up hitting it in that first game in Atlanta, Fulton County Stadium. Obviously a very iconic moment. This, the death of Henry Aaron is to quote the young kids, it's hitting people differently. I'm looking at a lot of broken up people talking about Henry Aaron. I'm seeing a different level of reverence attached to Henry Aaron. I wonder what it is. I've got some thoughts. I'm not sure what you're going to think about this because he was 86. It was not necessarily like he was taken suddenly. But I think it's because there's levels of guilt that a generation of Americans might feel when it comes to Henry Aaron, given the fact that what he achieved as an African-American playing in Atlanta, in the Deep South, passing America's first major sporting icon, Babe Ruth, that he went through just ugly, awful racism. Mm-hmm. And anybody who knows this story winces at what Henry Aaron had to go through. And he dealt with it very regally with a lot of class and a lot of humility. He carried a lot of scars, but he was a very private man, a very reserved man. So I wonder if there's that. Then I wonder if there's that sense of guilt that, okay, this was the all-time home run champion, not Barry Bonds. And Hank Aaron's death should not be a referendum to start ripping into Barry Bonds. But at the same time, I think that this is one of those unforeseen casualties of Barry Bonds taking that record and breaking that record.
Well, I mean, there's still a lot of people that follow baseball closely that recognize Henry Aaron as the all-time home run leader, that still recognize Roger Maris as the single-season home run leader. Because the guys that surpassed those marks, there's questions about them. To sit here and say that, you know, athletes today don't deal with racism would be foolish. But it was at a level that was so different. And let's remember, too,
Henry Aaron came up with the Milwaukee Braves. In 1966, they moved to the Deep South. So he moved with them. And that was a big ingredient in all the things that he had to go through or, had to endure. Just being a great baseball player. It breaks your heart. I'm glad he lived to the ripe old age of 86. One of the biggest thrills I've had in radio was when the All-Star game was here in Phoenix in 2011. He was in town, and I got a chance to interview him on a radio show that I was doing at that time. And it was just one of those guests where you just feel like you have to almost conduct yourself differently.
Well,
and the guy who made that highlight call that we played on the way in, Vin Scully, I had the same reverence when I got to interview him early on in my radio career. It just kind of snaps you into shape because that's how dignified and how important they both were to the sport of baseball.
Yeah. Henry Aaron, he grew up in the Jim Crow South, and that for athletes, that was something in and of itself. Post-Civil War life was not, even though slavery was abolished post-Civil War, what happened in the South after the Civil War was, in some cases, every bit as disturbing and every bit as damaging and as controlling to African Americans in the South. And that's what Henry Aaron grew up in. And so there was the plight of African Americans to get to Major League Baseball. Then there was the plight for them to actually achieve and threaten hallowed records. Henry Aaron was a pioneer in that regard. And I think that's why this death feels bigger, more important, monumental, historic even. I don't know. Henry Aaron, like I said, it's even when he was alive, even during the Barry Bonds, there were a lot of people who just naturally felt bad for him, sympathetic for him, of what he had to deal with. And he dealt with it, and he succeeded, and he achieved. He was one of the most effortless home run hitters I've ever seen, and I didn't see much of him play live. I've seen a lot of clips. I've read a lot about him. Apparently, he was one of those guys who was extremely big boned, so his forearms were like tree trunks, and he would just snap his wrist, and the ball would go,
but not
400 feet.
But not a huge man.
Not a huge man.
You know, I'm on his baseball reference page, listed at 6 feet, playing weight of 180 pounds.
Yeah, and he, like Babe Ruth, had a very, very heavy bat that he used, and he made home run hitting look easy and graceful, which is pretty much the way he played the game. But, man, mercy, what a titan of sport.
Yeah.
Not many from that era are left.
No.
No, hit Willie Mays and...
Just looking at some of the numbers, Hank Aaron got to where he got on the home run list, never hit more than 47 in a year, but had several 40-plus home run seasons, including his last one as a 39-year-old in 1973.
Wow.
And you might say, oh, big deal. A 39-year-old athlete in 1973 is far different from a 39-year-old athlete in 2021. They weren't into nutrition. They weren't into working out. Lifting weights was taboo.
No.
There wasn't a whole lot of taking
smoking
care of
the
yourself.
Dugout.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The fact that, and this is one of my favorite stats, if you took away every single one of Henry Aaron's home runs, all 755 of them, he still would have had 3,000 career hits.
See, now that's staggering. I've heard that stat before. I had forgotten it. I love that stat.
25, like I said in the splash, 25 all-star appearances in 23 years.
Man. Yeah.
That's one of the most iconic visual sporting things is him breaking the record, rounding the bases with the two people running on and patting him on the back, which, if you think of the context of him chasing that record, the fact that two fans got on the field.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, luckily they
were
just...
One of them was Craig Sager.
Well, yeah. Craig Sager was actually a young reporter at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you could see him holding this really antiquated tape recorder and some of the footage and some of the still shots from then.
But if you're Hank Aaron and you've dealt with all these
there's Craig Sager. You see
there
him
you
on the film
right,
television
there you
screen?
Go.
Yeah.
There you go. But I think if you're Hank Aaron and you've dealt with all these very real death threats... And you're rounding second base. There are these two white dudes running after you.
Luckily, there were just a couple of smelly hippies.
Well, and that was a thing. I mean, that was part of sport back then.
Mm-hmm.
Was And I remember, you know, being young and watching those Yankees teams in the 70s, and they finally broke that World Series drought. But I remember Chris Chambliss having to fight his way to hit home plate and get back to the dugout. Oh, yeah. It was bedlam. They used to run on the field all the time. They used to overtake security. It was nuts.
Yeah,
Yeah, could you imagine what was going through Hank Aaron's head?
No, I know. I know.
Sad day for baseball, but you know, thanks for all the contributions to Hank Aaron. One of the all-time greats passed away today at the age of 86. Coming up next, Phoenix Suns. They return home to take on the Denver Nuggets. Can DeAndre Ayton keep it up? That and more next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.